Welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists, hosted by Dr. Jake Porter. APSATS is a nonprofit organization providing professional training and compassionate support to partners affected by problematic sexual behavior and betrayal trauma. In each episode, Dr. Jake guides a conversation of enlightening insights and practical tools to empower those affected by sex addiction and betrayal trauma to use their voices and live their values. The mission of Betrayal Recovery Radio is to offer hope to those in need of healing and growth to those moving through grief. And now, here's your host, Dr. Jake Porter.
Well, hello, I am Dr. Jake Porter, and I am excited about this episode of Betrayal Recovery Radio, where we're going to continue a conversation that I started last week on the subject of core values, specifically as they can work together in the lives of couples, couples particularly who are in the after effects and trying to recover and heal from betrayal, from sex addiction, from trauma. Before we get back into that conversation, though, I wanted to let you know about a few things going on. APSATS, who is the rightful and wonderful sponsor of this program, has a number of wonderful trainings coming up, particularly the ERCM training. That is the Early Recovery Couples Empathy Model training with Carol, the coach. And you can learn more about that and many of the other trainings that APSATS is doing at APSATS.org, APSATS.org. So go check that out. I'll put that link in the show notes as always, but also want to let you know about another free resource that I'm offering called the Couples Boundaries Summit. The Couples Boundaries Summit is going to be a completely free online summit on September the 17th. And we're going to have, it's going to be myself and I'll be joined by five experts in this field, all talking about boundaries, different facets of boundaries and why they're important and how to construct good boundaries and all that good stuff. It's completely free. And you can sign up to get your free ticket at boundariessummit.com. That's B-O-U-N-D-A-R-I-E-S, the plural, Boundaries Summit, S-U-M-M-I-T.com, BoundariesSummit.com, and that link will also be in the show notes. Boundaries are hugely related to our values. Our boundaries should be reflective of our values, and so it's so essential that we know who we are and who we want to be. That's the subject of core values. So I hope that you enjoy the second half of this conversation today as we talk about core values for couples.
Okay. So how do we do it? How do you actually now like act out, you know, like, or not act out, choose your core values. So I want to tell you the quick and easy process to do it. And I'm even going to ask you to kind of do this now, but it doesn't have to stick. You can go back and put more thought into it later. You know, for yourself. In fact, I'd encourage you to do that. But just for the purpose of tonight and working through this webinar, I'm going to ask you to do this. So make a list of the moments in your life that you felt most alive, most truly yourself, most truly who you want to be and become. So like for me, I might think about my wedding day. That was a good day. That was a mountaintop day. Okay. The mountaintop sort of day. But, you know, I might think about a couple weeks ago, I got to speak at a conference and it went really well and it was exciting and I felt good about that. That's a mountaintop sort of day. So then the next step would be, what were the characteristics that I embodied in those moments? Okay. So what was I doing in those moments? Well, just thinking back to a couple weeks ago and that conference, I was teaching. I was passionate about the subject matter. I was challenging ideas that I felt like needed to be challenged. I was advocating for people that I feel particularly passionate to advocate for. So you might do some of that reflective work. I know you can't do all of that right here, right now in this moment. And then I would say use a list of core values. I'm going to throw a file up here that you can download now if you'd like. Use a list of core values to generate additional word choices. And I'm actually going to put a slide up here in a minute that has some, not a full list. In fact, I can't imagine a full list. But to start going through, and I just tell people, go through this, let's just circle everything that resonates with you, but then start grouping them together. Find those categories, like someone mentioned earlier, and see if you can settle on four. I like four. There are four directions on the compass, four cardinal directions, four core values. If you get more than that, to me, it starts getting a little bit crowded. That's just me, you know, and then I like to choose one of those four as your true north. So for me, my core values in life, and these change in different seasons of life. I updated my core values a couple years ago. My core values in life right now, as I mentioned earlier, courage, joy, kindness, humility. And my true north is courage. So in other words, by true north, here's what I mean. If in a split second, I have to make a decision, I need to act, okay? And I don't know what to do. I'm going to call on courage. What is the courageous thing to do here? And that's what I'm going to want to do. All right. So you can download this file that I've got shared with you right now. And it's got an actual compass where you can write the values that you come up with there. And it's got a list that you can use to brainstorm. You can also just Google list of core values and lots will pop up. Lots will pop up there. So let me stop sharing that for a moment and put up for you here. And I'm going to give you a moment to do this. This is just a small list. This is by no means complete of some core values. So take a moment and hopefully you've got some paper and pen, or maybe you can pull your phone out, do a note on your phone, or just hold it in your mind. And I want you to pick one value. You don't have to stick with it. You can change your mind after tonight. But just for the purpose of working through this process tonight, just pick one to work with as an example tonight. So I'm going to give you a moment to do that. Just take a few more moments. Again, please don't get all wrapped up in this like it's going to define your life, you know, for years. This is just for you to have something to work with for the evening. Okay. All right. Let me turn this back on, get back up here. Okay. Now, set that aside. This is not for tonight. This is for later when you actually walk through this. There are some other ways that you can come up with your core values, and I want to share those with you. So let's say that you want to do a little more than just this quick, you know, go through the list, find the ones that resonate, thinking about your, you know, when you feel most alive or most, you know, who you want to be. There's some other activities you can do as well that can be really helpful to this end. So one would be to make a list of the people you admire. These could be people that you actually know. They could just be historical figures. They might be fictional characters, okay? But people you admire, what character attributes does each of these possess, okay? Catherine said she didn't see the download for core values. I shared it there. I'll put it back up. This will also, I can also make this available to you all. Let's see. Share. There you go. It should give you the handout. So yeah, make a list of those people you admire and start thinking about why. What is it in this person that I admire? What's going on here that I really, you know, what are their character attributes that I'm looking up to? And try to discern what those are. Now, one of my favorite activities to assign people. I used to do this all the time when I was working, doing individual therapy with recovering addicts. I'd tell them to write their own obituary. So, in other words, like, use the actual obituary format. You know, Jacob Earl Porter of Houston, Texas, born on April the blah, 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 you know, died, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, he'll be remembered for, and during his life, he survived by, and friends knew him as, and think about what would you like people to actually, you know, write in your obituary? What do you want said of you when you die? And then from that, think through, what are the values that I need to embody and live to live my life to that end? What would those be? Some people think it's a morbid exercise. I actually think it's a beautiful thing to do. Talk about living life on purpose. Jonathan Edwards, who was a early American theologian, vital in the First Great Awakening, he wrote a resolution to think often of his own mortality, of his own death, and to use that to spur him toward the life he wanted to live. And then another possible thing to do is, especially if you're an overthinker, is this third one here, to consider the different domains in your life. So domains might include work, marriage, parenting, friendships, faith, etc. So these different domains in your life, because different domains may require different values. Your values at work may be different than your values at home. Your values in parenting will probably look different than your values in your friendships. And that's okay. That's okay. Often when people think that their values are in conflict, it's not so much that their values are in conflict. It's that they have domains in conflict. So maybe work and home life are vying for time and priority, and they have different values attached to them. It's not the values themselves that are the problem. The problem is the conflict in the domains. And that's where we have to have sort of an order to these things and ways of valuing one over the other. So those are just some ways of maybe going a little bit deeper into your individual core values. Now, how do you measure your core values? Well, I like to say values are most effective when measured by actions. Actions, actions, actions. Not just words, not just thoughts. I also like to say a choice hasn't actually been made until it is acted upon, right? I can make a choice. I'm going to go to Switzerland. But unless I actually go to Switzerland, did I really make the choice to go to Switzerland? Or at least take steps, you know, buy a plane ticket, something like that, right? There's going to have to be action there for a value to be embodied and to really be seen so that it can be measured for myself and for others. So here's how I would encourage you to do this. So think of someone who has embodied one of your values. So an example that I often use is Neil Armstrong. So when I was a kid, I thought that astronauts were incredible. I wanted to be an astronaut. I had all kinds of stuff from NASA, being from the Houston area. We had relationships with people who were there and with some astronauts, and I'd get actual, like, real patches from the different shuttle missions and that sort of thing. And I was big geek. And I thought Neil Armstrong, he walked on the moon, first man to walk on the moon. And I remember hearing the recording, watching the video and hearing the recording of his voice. This is one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. And so when I think about courage, I think about Neil Armstrong, because one of the things that I learned a lot about, one of the reasons I eventually decided, maybe I don't want to be an astronaut, is how risky it was. What a dangerous job being an astronaut is. So I might think of Neil Armstrong with courage. And then number two, write down how this person embodied that value. And I've done this process. I actually wrote down, he flew to the moon and he stepped out on the moon. And when he did it, he said he understood this wasn't for him. This was for all mankind. This is about the progress of all humankind. One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. So from that action, step three here, create a definition of the value. So I'm looking at what this person did. This is external to me, but I admire this, right? It speaks to me. It resonates. It's calling forth something without of me, out of me. And so I'm looking at this and I'm going, okay, what is the definition of courage then? If this is courage, well, I might say something like, well, courage is when I take a risk to myself for the good of others. That might be the courageous thing to do. When I do what's best, not just for me, but for everybody, even though it's scary, that might be courage. So now I've got this definition. And now, number four, I'm going to brainstorm specific actions that I can take to embody the value. So what are ways I can do that? What are ways I can embody courage? Well, I could speak up for those who don't have a voice. That might be one thing I could do very specifically. And I might even get more specific. What's a specific group that doesn't have a voice? Well, maybe, thankfully, this is changing in my field, but there was a time when betrayed partners were labeled as, were very likely to be labeled as co-addicts or codependents or something like that, rather than being recognized as being traumatized. Well, I can advocate. I can be courageous. Even if a colleague is going to think, oh, well, he's one of those or whatever, I can speak up. I can speak to that. That might be one way. Well, what's another way I can do it? And I want to come up with several. I want to come up with three or four or five specific ways. Just as ideas, because I want to practice thinking through how it would be put into action. And then number five, every day, act intentionally and specifically on every core value. So you don't necessarily do this forever for the rest of your life, but if you're actually with intention doing core values work, then for a period of a few weeks, you might have this daily review of your core values and you ask yourself, how have I been courageous today? Or how am I going to be courageous today? You can do it looking ahead or you can do it in review. How am I going to do this? And make plans or review and maybe make corrections if needed to act on those. And so you're doing it on purpose with intention. There are probably ways you're acting on your core values without intention, because sometimes we do that because it is a part of us. But where it really matters is when you do it on purpose, because those are the moments when there's probably another part of you that would choose otherwise. And so when you take the risk and you do it in that moment, that's where the real change at that deep level, even down to the level of your neural pathways, begins to happen. All right. So hear what I'm saying. You got to act on it. Okay. Now, the key to doing this is that I have to own it for myself. Okay. They're not going to happen by accident. Yeah, I may here or there act courageously or kindly. But in terms of adopting it as a core value and one that defines my life and reorients my developmental trajectory, that's not going to happen by accident. Okay. It's got to happen on purpose. And the reality is that our histories and our primal defenses, they're going to pull us away from our values, not toward them. I've got a graphic I'm going to show you in a minute to expand on that more. And so I have to have my core values clearly defined, perhaps for multiple domains of my life, work, home, wherever. And then I need to intentionally make choices and review choices in light of them. And I have to remain committed to my core values despite the actions and reactions of others. So some of you may have seen this before. And there's a corresponding one I'll show you here in just a minute. But this is the cycle of dysfunction. If you're interested in this, I've got a little offer. I'm going to throw up a link here. you this a lot of this that I'm talking about, if you haven't done my free 40-day Choose Connection Challenge, the next round of that begins on June 11th. I've got up a button there that you can push. You can sign up for the free 40-day Choose Connection Challenge if you want to. If you want to do that later, just go to daringventures.com. Really easy to sign up for that. And I expand on this a whole lot more there. In fact, you can watch a whole hour and 15-minute video that covers this slide and the next slide. But here's what I want to say for tonight is that our old scripts that from our history cause these things that happen that rupture our relationships, where we get triggered, where we think, oh no, I'm not safe, and we start focusing on self-protection. These old scripts to which we passively conform cause us to embody old roles that are only going to reinforce the old scripts. So if I have this old belief that I have to do it myself, if it's going to get done, no one ever's going to meet needs for me, I have to do it myself. Okay. If that's what I live in, and I go there and I play that out, and then I embody that by then walking away, huffing and puffing. I don't come from a place of integrity, voice my needs and wants, or do that, or set a bat, or whatever's appropriate there. Instead, I just huff off and go do it myself. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a confirmation bias. See, I knew it. I knew that's the case. You know what? I get a little dopamine hit from that. All right. And it's going to have an effect in my relationship that's going to reinforce this whole dynamic as well. I know that's super fast, but if you want to learn more about that, I've got a whole talk on that. Oh, I realized I didn't publish the, there we go. There's where you can sign up for the Choose Connection Challenge. There should be a button up there for you if you're interested in that. Now, we've also got, though, this other cycle. And I know that all those little gray dots, people make fun of me for my gray dots. That's the cloud of struggle. It's not dirt on the screen. Okay, but here's what I want to point out to you is how core values come into play. When that relational rupture happens, what could be a trigger, what could send me into moving toward dysfunction, moving toward the old bias, the old scripts, instead, I say, you know what? No, I'm going to act on my core values. I'm going to protect the relationship. I'm going to make a conscious choice here, not fall into old passive ways. I activate my core values and I embody those. I make an active choice to embody those. What I get is the reward of that internal congruence, that integrity. It feels good. And I get that regardless of how the other person responds. Now, might I be disappointed if they don't respond well? Of course. But I can also go, but you know what? I can look myself in the mirror and say, I embodied my core values there. I was in my integrity there. But often when I act on my core values, I do actually get authentic intimacy or connection in relationships. I do get that. And then when that happens, then that's going to reinforce the next time there's that rupture that I act on my core values again. So you put this all together. What it comes down to is, do I act on my core values or on those old scripts? Do I reinforce these regressive old ways, or do I move forward in my own development? Do I make choices to move myself forward? I know that was really fast covering these slides, but I don't want to repeat, because for free, you can go watch a whole thing on this. The point that's relevant to this webinar is that I get to own choices that break me out of old dysfunctional ways and move me into becoming who I want to be for myself and for my relationships. Okay, we're going to shift now. So I've been talking about your individual core values. We're going to shift now to talk about bringing core values into the coupleship, into your relationship, to bear on, bringing them to bear on your marriage or your partnership. Okay. So first of all, how do core values then actually transform our relationships? Well, first of all, they shed light on where boundaries should be created and respected. So if I'm trying to set my core value or set boundaries or voice boundaries, and I don't have clarity of my own values, then I'm going to end up probably not communicating my boundaries in a way that makes it clear that they're not punitive, They're really about protection. You know, they're not rash. They're from a grounded place. And so when I come from that place of my values, I'm gonna better understand what my boundaries need to be. I'm also gonna better understand why my partner might have the boundaries she has. And so the whole issue of boundaries just becomes so much easier to navigate when both people are in touch with their core values. Let me just say this, just a sneak peek. This hasn't been publicly announced yet, so y'all are the first to hear this. My next webinar is going to be on the subject of boundaries. So Boundaries Revisited is next, a little different look on boundaries, trying to help you understand a little better what they really are and how they work and what makes them effective. That's next time. So hopefully you'll join me for that too. But core values are a really important part of that process. Number two, values keep me from feeling stuck or like a victim by providing a pathway forward. Remember, my values can always be called upon. No one else can take them from me. I can always act on my values in a moment. And so because they turn that locus of control from being external, that external locus of control, to internal. So for example, let's say, this is real. This could be any number of clients, so I'm not picking on anyone specific. But let's say there's a recovering addict who isn't really recovering very smoothly. And maybe he's holding on to lots of old behaviors and not letting them go. And his wife, you know, is feeling stuck in this. Well, by calling upon her core values, which might be fidelity. So in other words, I want to be in a relationship where we're faithful to each other. All right. So if he's not doing that and she's voiced that and set that boundary, she can say no, and she can choose to step away, because staying is a violation of her own values, and she has the right to that choice. And he could say, well, that's an ultimatum. Well, yeah, you're right. That's exactly the definition of an ultimatum. You're going to be faithful or not be a part of this relationship. Okay. But there are choices. We all have choices. That's something we say a lot in my house. We all have choices. Everybody has choices. The other really powerful thing here, and this is, I love seeing this shift when I'm working with couples. It's this third bullet point here, that values empower us by turning have to into want to and choose to. So let's say a guy says, well, she says I have to take, you know, a polygraph every 6 months for the next 2 years. Okay, that's one way to look at it. But do you really have to? Well, yeah, she says I have to. But do you really have to? Can't you say, no, you won't do that? Yeah, but she said she'll leave me. Okay, but you could. You can choose, right? You've got a choice. She's saying, my choice is, I'm only going to stay in the relationship if you take a polygraph. Okay, ball's in your court. He's now saying, now I have to do this. I don't have a choice. You do have a choice. Now, where do core values come into play? I know this is murky between core values and boundaries, but this just shows how related they are. Well, let's say that he says, you know what? The husband I want to be is one who actively promotes the safety of his wife, who's caring and compassionate towards his wife, who's empathetic towards his wife. Okay, well, if he can get in that place and he can act on those, then he can say, oh, it's not that I have to take a polygraph. It's that I understand this helps her feel safe. So I want to. I choose to. You know, my wife, she can grab my phone. She can look at my phone anytime, anything in my phone. She's got access to it. Okay. Is it have to? Oh, I have to give her access to my phone. I don't have any privacy. No, I want to. I choose to, because that's what's in line with my values. So I'm not stuck or I'm not a victim. I want to do this. And that's authentic. That's sincere. Now, I get it that people, when this is new, there's an internal conflict. There's a struggle there. There's going to be. That's okay. In fact, if there's not, you're probably not doing it right. But the more I act on my values and I make the choice according to them, the more I move myself in that developmental, along that developmental trajectory. So the more I act in ways that are, say, compassionate toward my partner, the more compassionate I become. And the things that I have to do to act out that compassion go from being have-tos to want-tos and choose-tos. And then the last piece here is that values in terms of relationships, they make really clear what we do have control over and what we don't have control over. So years ago, I do not work with teenagers anymore. I'm thankful for those two. But for a while, I actually directed a program for adolescents with compulsive pornography use. And I developed this with them, but I find that I use this with adults now often. And there's an exercise called Living the Serenity Prayer. So remember the Serenity Prayer, just to remind you of it if you hadn't heard it in a while. Listen to the parts of this prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So I would always work with these teenagers and I'd say, okay, that's nicely phrased, but let's operationalize it. Where would you, what's necessary first? And if you think about it logically, the first phrase that's necessary there is the wisdom part. Okay, so before I can do the, you know, acceptance part or the courage to change, the serenity to accept part or the courage to change part, I've got to have these two categories clear, what I can change, what I can't. And apparently I need wisdom to do that. So first I need wisdom, and then I've got these two categories. And so there's actually a little sheet, and I'm going to make this available to you as well. I've got a file here to share. Oh, I didn't do this one. That's okay. Anyone wants this, you can email me and I'll send you an actual PDF. Oh, actually, you know what? I think I can add it real quick. Living the Serenity Prayer. Let me throw it up here for y'all. Here we go. Yeah. So you should now, there should be a button there for you to download PDF for this if you want. But the way this works is there's some columns and you write down a situation, all right, whatever that situation is. And then you just stop and just pray and ask God for wisdom, all right? You need wisdom. So get grounded in yourself, you know, and pray and ask God, okay, I need wisdom here. What do I have to let go of and what can I take action on? What's within my control and what's not? And here's where core values come into play. If it's something you can't change, that's not where your values come into play. That's where you might have wants and needs and desires, but those aren't the same as your values. And like I might have a want. This is one that I hear from a lot of couples who are, you know, journeying their way to healing. Let's say a wife who's been betrayed is not feeling safe being physically intimate. And the husband's saying, but I want that physical intimacy with my wife. And it's not even from a compulsive place. I just love her. I want to be near her. I validate that. I get that. That's a want. But the thing is, that's not a value, because if it were a value, you could do it for yourself. You know, like it's internal to you. It's that internal locus of control. You might have a want for physical affection or physical intimacy. Okay. But you have to let go of that. That's God's part. Okay. You can't. All right. But what can you do? Well, this is where you can live your values. These are the things that you can do no matter what your partner's doing or not doing. So the things that, so let's just carry that example out. So my wife doesn't feel safe to be intimate with me, but I really want that, but I can't do that. So I've got to let go of her having sex with me. But what can I do? I can connect with her emotionally. I can invest in, you know, invest like emotionally, relationally in pursuing her in appropriate ways that she's comfortable with, right? I can demonstrate safety by respecting her boundaries. These are all things that I can do that might help her. Now, I can't control her. I can't manipulate her. I shouldn't. But I can do these things to help create a context in which she might choose to engage me in this way. And so that's where my personal core values begin to shift the developmental trajectory of the relationship. Because I understand where I end and where my wife begins, where my partner begins. Okay. I'm not wasting time and energy trying to change them. I am acting on my values for the good of myself and my partner and the relationship. And that is going to have an effect one way or another. Maybe not the way I want exactly, not the speed I want exactly, but it is going to have an effect one way or another. All right. All right. So how about actually coming up with core values for the relationship? Well, what I say is you really do have to be clear on your own core values first. You're not going to lose yourself or give yourself up in this process. You actually act as yourself, for yourself, and for your partner, and for the sake of the relationship when you do this. But that clarity for yourself first is really, I think really enriching to the process of then doing it together. Secondly, once you have that clarity for yourself, then you're going to share your core values with each other. So I sit down with my wife. In fact, my wife asked me, so I'm going to admit, I actually have not done this process with my wife. We've been busy like getting married 3 years ago and moving and having a baby and that sort of thing. But we're going to do it. I told her, yeah, let's do this. So we're going to do this. She's going to have access to this. She's going to work on her core values. Then we're going to sit down together and we're going to share those with each other. And we're going to not just like read the list to each other, but hey, here's what I mean by this. Here's the definition. These are the people, you know, walk through the process, really share more about it. Here's the ways I try to act on these, embody these. I'm going to dialogue about it. What's hard about this one? And I'm going to say, oh, I've seen you do that when you act out that value that, you know, I saw you do that the other day. Maybe you didn't even realize it. Here's what I saw. So we have that conversation with each other. And as we do, we're going to just start noting, paying attention to where do we have shared values and where do we have overlap in our values? So let's say, you know, I talk about what I mean by kindness and she talks about what she means by, I'm just making this up, patience. And we're like, you know what, I think sort of a common touch point there for us is that we're talking about being respectful toward each other. Okay, so maybe respect would be a core value for us. So we might make note of that. And then we're going to list the various domains in our relationship, parenting, communication, sex, hobbies, finances, conflict, work, family, that different domains, different couples are going to have different sets of domains. But I want to think through those and maybe don't come up. I'm not saying you come up with four, a whole compass for each of those, but just start jotting down. Okay. Well, in terms of communication, we want to be respectful and in sex, we want there to be mutuality. We want there to be safety. In finances, we want there to be transparency. We write these things down and then we're going to look at that and we're going to try to start boiling it down to its basic essence until can we find four values? Can we agree upon four values? One of them would be a true north. That really fit for all of those. Someone, Catherine, just put in the text box, I find my definition of respect is different than my husband's. Talk about that. It might be. Talk about that. Here's what I, and sometimes people need help with this. Here's what I would say to make that a productive conversation. Work to focus on the similarity rather than the difference. there might always be some difference in, well, I think respect looks like this and I think respect looks like that. And we highlight the differences. The reality is there might always be differences, but are there similarities? Where is there agreement? If you can work toward that, you're going to find progress, I think, toward mutuality happening a lot faster in that way. Hope that's helpful. But we're going to work hard. We're going to boil it down. We're going to wrestle with it until we can come up with our four core values as a couple. Now, let's say we want to go a little deeper. We want to go beyond just this listing process. Here are a couple of exercises that you could do. Imagine a conversation with your grandchildren. Maybe you actually have grandchildren. Maybe you don't have grandchildren yet. So you're envisioning one day having them. Imagine a conversation with grandchildren describing the relationship you want them to have one day. What do you want the markers of? You're sharing wisdom with them now. What are the markers of a good relationship? So what are the things you would share? That might be one fun exercise. Another one would be think about times when you and your partner are at your best in terms of being a couple, you know, working together, collaboration, connection. In those moments, what characterizes your relationship? So, you know, I've seen couples where they are phenomenal at hospitality. They work like one as one, you know, when they're doing hospitality. Why? What's going on there? What's shared in those moments? So really pick that apart and think through that. Maybe you ask the friends that you host, what do you see us doing? What are the character traits that you see us acting on, embodying when we have our, you know, those get togethers or whatever. So think about what those things are. Maybe some couples are really good at taking on, you know, big projects, you know, landscaping the yard or a renovation. Some couples are really, really good at parenting together. I've had couples who have all kinds of conflict between the two of them, but they're excellent at parenting together. Okay, what's going on in those moments? You know what? I'll tell you right there, one of the ones that always comes out when I'm helping couples and they talk about that is in those moments, they trust that they want the same thing. They both want the best for their kids. That's a big deal. Mutual trust. Maybe mutual trust is a core value, you know, for you to try to start working into the rest of your relationship. Maybe you need to operationalize that, or how would you, maybe there's a better word for it, but you know, go from there. So that's another exercise you can do just to go a little bit deeper in finding your core values together as a couple. This is something you've probably seen me show things like this before, how couples get in these cycles of dysfunction. Okay, she's feeling not seen, not heard, not chosen, and she's reacting, she's feeling criticized, all this kind of stuff. He's feeling not enough, he's feeling like a failure, he's withdrawing, defending, arguing, all this kind of stuff. And so they're both in a threat state and there's no relational safety, and their external cues are actually reinforcing each other's internal attachment wounds, and there's this horrible amplification, this feedback loop of this trauma dance. Well, here's where core values come into play. They've each got their core values. Well, what can happen? Well, what if this guy here, instead of taking the red route, okay, instead he acknowledges what he's feeling. You know what? My failure, my sense of shame is coming up, but I don't want to act on that. I want to act on my core values. And I just made this up as an example. Let's say this guy's core values were, I want to be compassionate, patient, gentle, and courageous. So how's he going to do that? How's he going to do that? Well, he's going to actually speak straight to her attachment needs. Hey, I can see that you're feeling not seen and not heard, that you're really afraid right now. That is not what I want. You and this relationship is what matters most. I see you, I choose you, whatever those words are. And when he does that and she stops going this direction, he's going to suddenly feel, oh, I didn't fail just there. I know it's not that easy. I've got whole webinars on this if people are interested in that. you can view those other old webinars. But I just want to plug in the concept of core values. They come into play in those moments where you're doing that trauma dance, where you're in that feedback loop, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. If one person can get their core values out in front of them and call upon those, one person can do that. They can disengage. At the very least disengage. They might be able to bring both people together because you call upon those core values to come together. But at the very least, they can act in their own integrity and not continue to feed the loop. All right. Taking measures to act in alignment with their values. All right. So, okay. What if you're in the midst of this though, and now you see, what if you really are trying to be in your own core values and your own integrity, but you see that your partner's not? How do you call each other toward core values? So three little tips here. Number one, the way you speak is as important as what you say. Okay, so if I say to my wife, you're not being very compassionate right now, and you said you were going to work on your compassion. That is not helpful. Okay, so we want to call each other to our values from a place of kindness and collaboration, safety, not judgment and opposition, because I'm actually defeating the purpose. If core values are meant to unite, but I speak it from a place of opposition and judgment, I'm counteracting the thing I'm doing. It's not going to have the effect. So I speak from that place of kindness and judgment. And number two, you never do this in public. You don't do this in public. You never throw your partner under the bus, especially in public. You save moments of correction or question or criticism or whatever, which in a safe relationship, we want to be able to do those things with our partner. I need my wife to correct me. I need my wife to give me helpful criticism at times, but I want her to do that when it's just us. I don't want her to do it necessarily in the moment in front of other people. Now, are there limits to this? If someone's being abusive to you or something like that, that is, I hope y'all understand, that's not what I'm talking about. And then number three, speak from and for the we. So I want to give you an example about this, that this is a true story that my wife doesn't mind that I should, well, actually, I don't know if I've asked her about this one specifically, but I'm pretty sure she won't care. Back when we were dating, before we were married, I was a pastor. We had gone out on a Saturday night, and I had church the next morning, and I probably hadn't finished my sermon yet. And I was like, we went out. I think we saw a movie, went to dinner or something like that. And I was taking her back to her place, and I dropped her off, and she was like, you want to, you know, come in for a while and talk, you know, have coffee or whatever. And I said, no, I really need to get home tonight. And she started kind of whining about it and acting, you know, she wasn't real happy about it. I said, well, you know, I'm sorry, you know, I've had a really good time tonight, but I've got to get up really early in the morning. I'm not finished with my sermon yet, you know. And she kept on. And I finally just looked at her. We'd been dating for a while. You know, I just looked at her and said, listen, we don't do that. We don't do that. And she knew exactly what I meant. That was, you know, try to guilt each other when there's a good reason. I'm not being selfish. I'm not, you know, I've been clear. I've honored my commitment. We're not going to do this thing where now we start kind of guilting each other or whatever. She said, we don't do that. And it was a defining moment for us in a lot of ways. We don't do that. And we don't now. We don't do that. My wife, what she would say about that is she's like, I wasn't used to people talking to me like that. Guys I dated talking to me that way.
You've been listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of AppSats. If you've received help or hope from this episode, I encourage you to share it with someone you know. If you've not yet done so, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite listening platform. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Jake Porter, and you can always email me directly at jake@appsats.org. I'd love to hear your ideas, questions, or comments about the show. Until next time, keep choosing to use your voice and live your values. It's good for you and for this world.